This episode of Football 301, Matt Harmon joins me to talk about the teams we don't talk about. We're going to check in on a few teams that might have gone by the wayside, including the defending champion Seattle Seahawks, but then some other teams, the Broncos, the Colts, the Commanders, the Chiefs. Yes, the Chiefs, but teams, good, bad, everything in between. We're going to talk about them for a good while today on this show. Great show. See you guys in a sec. Hello and welcome back to Football 301. I'm your host, Nate Tice. Another great show for you guys today. Even with the United States with a gigantic egg on their face after that loss to Belgium, we're still going to have a great show because we're going to talk about some American footy and we're going to talk about teams that apparently we don't talk about. So if you're complaining that we never talk about your team, we're always talking about the Rams too much and all the moves that they do, we're gonna throw a bone. We're going to cover the entire league here and try and fill in the lines before we get into training camp. But to help me do that today, now, a couple of weeks back from his vacation. So I think he's, you know, he's above board. You know, he's got his feet wet again. Yeah. But yeah, as always, to help me do this, my good friend, Matt Harmon. How you doing today, Matt?
I'm good, man. Yeah, I wasn't ready for the whiplash after USA loses in the World Cup match to Belgium in, as you said, embarrassing fashion. And immediately the entire timeline really just like, hey, don't forget, NFL training camp opens in 11 days. Oh, God.
I wasn't ready, 10 wasn't Sundays, ready for that whiplash. 9 Sundays now.
Yeah. All these, like, this many Sundays, this, that, and the other. I'm excited about football, but it feels, and maybe I'm wrong, it feels like we still got a long way to go, but I guess not. 11 days, training camp's open? That's frightening.
Yeah. My birthday is at the end of July, so my entire life, like being in media and football media has been just a nice transition for me because my entire internal clock is set to the football season. So my birthday always means the end of fun, which is the irony of it all. I've never really enjoyed many normal birthdays in my life because it's always either I was in training camp or my dad was in training camp. So to me, that's always the signal of, oh, okay, I'm in lockdown for the next 28 weeks until the Super Bowl ends. And then I come out from air, and then we get into draft season, and then I come out for air. Yeah. And then right now I'm taking that big breath in, but I'm like, it's like a little gray area right now. Like, I'm excited for the season to start, but I'm also going, oh, shoot, my birthday's in a couple weeks. That means training camp is starting, and that means preview series, and that means we're really getting into it, Matt.
It's better than having a real job. I'll say that at least.
As always. As always. I've never, I did a 9-to-5 job for a year as an insurance salesman, and I went crazy. So that's, you guys get the receipts of that when I'm on podcasting right now. So that's as long as I lasted 11 months of 9-to-5. And I was like, nope. Give me the weird hours. Give me the 6 a.m. Give me the 8 p.m. No, I need the weird hours. But we're going to talk about some of these teams because I get it. Sometimes just a team stays in the headlines. Maybe someone's has some new coaches, some new players. They trade for Myles Garrett. Or they're just an interesting dark horse, and so we just kind of keep reiterating on them. Or they're the Arizona Cardinals, and we're contractually obligated to talk about the Arizona Cardinals and the Jacksonville Jaguars on this show. But today, we're going to just focus on some teams, good, bad, everything in between, that maybe we haven't touched on. Maybe we haven't kept up on. Maybe we did the draft. Hey, they got a B in the draft, and we just moved on. Or same with free agency. So we'll just talk about some of those teams, and we'll just dive into them. Kind of like a preview before the preview shows that are going to hit in August. And again, we'll be doing our divisional preview shows all throughout August, which are some of my favorites because it's such great homework. But let's do a little rough draft of that homework. A little summer reading, I suppose. Yeah, there we go. That's how we tie it in. We're going to start with our producer, Stone, agrees with this. And this wasn't the team that started this idea for this show, but potentially the least talked about Super Bowl champs in a long time. At least that's what Seattle Seahawks fans feel right now. But we'll start with the Seattle Seahawks. They won the Super Bowl. Truly an all-time defense and offense that got hot. At least the run game got hot as the season went along. Sam Darnold played well. They return a ton of familiar faces. They change offensive coordinators, adding in Brian Flurry from San Francisco. I believe, yes, Brian. I mean, that's the thing with new OCs. It's like, hey, if you come off the beaten path, I just don't know your name off the top of my head. I'm a Brian Flurry from San Francisco. I have a whole background on him. Don't you guys worry. Lost Kenneth Walker. They lost Kobe Bryant. They lost Reek Woolen. They lost Boy Mafi. And of course, Clint Kubiak. extended JSN, extended Derek Hall. I really like that signing. Josh Jobe, Rashid Shaheed, and Charles Cross, some good players there right now. Drafted Jadarian Price in the first round, safety Bud Clark, and Julian Neal as well. So the Seahawks, Matt, I'll start with you. Do you feel like they are the least talked about Super Bowl champs in our maybe media lifetime? I mean, that for you is about, what, over a decade now, me for about a half decade? Mm-hmm. Or do you just think it's because they're returning so much, they don't have any of those splashy moves, and they kind of just, that's just how it goes in the offseason?
I think there's some truth on both sides there. It is very funny and very indicative of our show, I think, that the first two teams that we're going to talk about here today, spoiler for the second one, is probably two of, like, you could argue the best team in either conference last year. Yeah. While you just waved away the fact, like, oh yeah, we talk about the Arizona Cardinals plenty. We might be the only NFL show that does that, that has that claim to fame right there. Yeah, we haven't talked about the Super Bowl champs enough, or again, what you could very well argue was the best team in the AFC, but we've talked about the Cardinals and the Jags plenty. Don't worry. Very plenty funny, just that little footnote of our show. But yeah, no, I do think that the Seahawks have been under discussed for a couple of the different reasons that you mentioned there. And yeah, a lot of it is that they're just, there's a lot of continuity on this team other than the offensive coordinator, who was a pretty big factor, I think, in them having an identity shift, which was very that was obviously of utmost importance for Mike McDonald last year. Like, they wanted to be more of an offense that they were last season after maybe an arranged marriage with Ryan Grubb that just obviously did not work out in McDonald's first year there. So yeah, that's a pretty big significant change, but otherwise they're returning a ton of their starters, and they also don't have, and we were talking about this like pre-show, they weirdly don't have a divisive quarterback anymore. And that's funny to say about Sam Darnold, who for so long, you know, I had the running bit that, like, there are the Sam Darnold oligarchs, like my great co-host here, Nate Tice, where you guys were shouting at us from your bully pulpits that, oh, no, Sam Darnold is actually way better than you peons think. And you guys were right. You won, but you also haven't gone bread. So far to then
take it and like well. It.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. Take it. Don't get addicted to the water. But no, I think that you therefore like you've won the battle, but you also haven't then doubled down further to be like, but actually no, he's like a top five quarterback now. So there's just no, they don't have like a divisive quarterback at this point anymore. I think we all kind of have level set to what Sam Darnold is. And yeah, they've mm-hmm. returned the offensive player of the year in Jaxon Smith-Njigba, who is a very likable and very easy player to root for. So just like, I think that's part of it as well. The offensive line, there's some continuity, defensive continuity. There's mm-hmm. just not a lot to debate here, other than I guess they took a first round running back, which some people will have big feelings about, but it was the 32nd overall pick. So it's really not that offensive. Yeah, there's just, they haven't done anything crazy. And I mean that complimentary. And that's kind of just why we haven't really talked about them.
Yeah, I think nothing's been offensive. You know, they went off a little off the beaten path with who they hired an offensive coordinator, you know, first time play caller. But still, it also made sense why they went there. They just kind of tapped into mm-hmm. the same well. And hopefully that's where they get the continuity. And you mentioned the continuity. And I think not only just player wise, coaches wise, like they didn't get mm-hmm. ransacked. It wasn't like, oh, well, they lost half their coaching staff and there's some brain drain going on. It's like, no, the entire offensive coaching staff basically stayed. Even like assistant coaches, like Jake Peets, who actually worked with the Raiders, you know, I know he handles like situational stuff, like red zone, third down. So even just like that is returning to Seattle. So there's just even that component that's going to make it at least an easier transition than maybe like the Lions did last year with Morton. And it's just going like, okay, yeah, this guy should know the offense, but he kind of doesn't. And also he's barely called plays mm-hmm. before. And at least this one, I understand the process. For those who don't know Brian Fleury, he was a tight end coach and run game coordinator, I believe, as well with San yep. Francisco. He started under Ralph Frigen with Maryland. Fridge, shout out Fridge. And Doug Marrone was his first job in the NFL. So he's got some old school kind of Northeast types there. He went to Townsend in Maryland as well. He's a quarterback, but he coached a lot of defense. And it reminds me a lot of the background of Kevin Stefanski and Drew Petzing a little bit, where they did everything. He's coached yeah. everything. He's been like an analytics guy, like kind of like game situations guy, special projects guy. He's coached defense, coached tight ends, was run game coordinator, has a quarterback background. So those guys are interesting because they could have a lot of, like Ben Johnson was like this a little bit as well. Ben Johnson was mostly offense, but just bounced around from role to role, where these guys can kind of become a cool grab bag of understanding defenses and understanding how to manipulate that, but also kind of because they coach different positions, in theory, that could be a really cool thing. Like that can be like, hey, they have some cool ideas because they see it from a different perspective. But that's all theory until I see him, you know, carving out a game plan in week 3 or week 7 or week 9 and, you know, two guys are hurt, and we'll see how he kind of does everything off of that. But it's interesting. It's a cool process rather than hiring a retread or something, and at least trying to get some of the same ideas, but maybe a couple new twists. You know, Clint Kubiak is actually very traditional. Like his stuff is very the most pure of that offensive tree. His is the most pure form, even more than Kyle Shanahan's. So I'm curious what Fleury kind of molds into his own version. So I think if this was 5 years ago, when every time anyone hired a Shanahan assistant, everyone was just like, oh, you did the right thing. Now it's funny how we got to the point that all these guys, now we've had some bad ones. We've had some Bobby Slowicks. And so now it's like, we'll see. You know, like it's not just an instant, oh yeah, chalk it up, top five offense right here. So another thing too, I just have to mention this because I see Seahawks fans getting mad about this, you know, oh, you think our skill players are this ranking, or our offense, we didn't have, I didn't mean it kind of show, we didn't have the Seahawks as a top 10 offense. Your offense was solid last year. It wasn't a top 10 offense, which is more remarkable about the defense and the special teams and just how well enough that they did. It was like 14th in weighted DVOA, you know, 10th overall in DVOA. I just said it wasn't a top 10 offense. So I just ruined myself right there. But no, most of the EPA and everything numbers were like 12 to 16, 12 to 18, somewhere in that range, above average to good. It wasn't like the lead offense, but that just spoke to what the Seahawks were last year. Pretty good on offense, extremely explosive, really good defense, really good special teams. And that was their formula. So just one little thing to poke at. Question for you. How do you feel about the Seahawks skill players at this point in time? Like they were bringing back everybody, JSN, Rashid Shaheed, Cooper Kupp. They have AJ Barner. Elijah Arroyo could be interesting at tight end. And then the running back room is kind of an interesting question mark as well, even with the first round pick. But just curious where you stand with that skill player group right now.
Well, yeah, I mean, to your point, I think they, at the beginning of the year, they came out really hot in the passing game. Mm-hmm. They were super explosive with Sam Darnold and Jaxon Smith-Njigba. You know, it was like very obvious. I was writing this at around like week 3, like, oh, yep, JSN's like ascended to the elite tier of receivers. It's very obvious. It's just, it was super obvious watching this team and what they were doing and the way he was playing in isolation. But yeah, they went through kind of some peaks and valleys offensively, and they really never got the run game going. That's what's so interesting on the Brian Fleury part of this, who, you know, all, you rattled off the coaching background he has. He also had like a stint as director of football research for the Miami Dolphins at one point too. Like he's truly done everything. And obviously coming as a run game coordinator here, you wonder if he can kind of not revolutionize what they did in the run game, but just build on that. That's what, if Kubiak was back this year, you'd think like, okay, we had a good first step, a good first year. Let's take another step this year, which I think would be building more of a consistent run game. But the good part, I think, if you're a Seahawks fan, what you would argue here is that outside of Cooper Kupp, like everybody should, I think, have another step to take. I mean, JSN, you probably can't say he's going to take another step from being like, I don't know, the you know, fourth or third best receiver in the NFL to like the first. I mean, maybe he is, but still that would be kind of a big jump. But like Barner is still a young and growing player. Rashid Shaheed, maybe not, you know, he's on his second contract now, but I think there's more to get out of him than what they got when they traded for him in the middle of last season. Obviously a rookie running back. I'm still a fan of Torrey Horton, who's like their fourth receiver now at this point. I think he can make some plays. He was really showing well before he got hurt last year. Even Elijah Arroyo, you mentioned second year tight end. Like that's how the skill position players get better, is that they're just younger and they take another step here. Because on paper, yeah, if they all just kind of run back the level of play that they had last year, they have one guy in the center of the universe in JSN and everyone kind of orbits around him. But if one or two, or even, you know, God willing, three of these guys take another step in this second season under, you know, obviously the same offense, but different coordinator, I think then you're talking about a skill position group that's much better.
Yeah, I know. I actually feel pretty good about it, because also beginning of last season, it was like Torrey Horton had those moments and I was, you know, we were waving flags and going, ha,
oh yeah.
And then, but then you saw the reasons why he dropped to day 3, because he got hurt. That's going to be his thing. And then Rashid Shaheed comes in and kind of fulfilled the same role. So it's really interesting, because JSN has shown so much more vertically than I ever thought he could be. And that's what's been, we've talked about this. I mean, even a year, I would say a year ago, you and I started having the, kind of the theories that JSN could take that leap. Like you had your versions of it, like with, based on your research and everything. And then also mine was more, Clint Kubiak offenses, they can hyper fixate on whoever the number one is. It was Andre Johnson who we brought up. And then it kind of, it was one of those where it was like, I was right. I wish I took advantage of it being right. Like it was like, I didn't know I was gonna be this right. I think you were even more right than me. But bringing that all up is that they've reached their equilibrium, I guess. I'm trying to think of the best way to put it. The second half of the year, they kind of, everything crystallized. The roles crystallized. I think the offensive flow crystallized. From week 10 onwards, they were ninth in success rate. I'm just going against my own statement here where they didn't have a top 10 offense. So whatever. That's part of this discussion. So since week 10, they had a ninth best offense in terms of success rate. Eighth in success rate in pass and 14th in the run. That's good. But the fact that they could live this way without having to be super explosive, they're only 15th in explosive play rate in the second half of the year. That's what they want to achieve more. Because it's not going to, when you just rely on explosive plays, if those dry up, I mean, all Seattle fans should know this watching the Mariners, those home runs dry up, runs are hard to come by. And the fact that now they're able to kind of string hits together with this offense, that's what I'm curious about. Now, Charbonnet was a big part of that. And even with Charbonnet could be, you know, rushing success rate wise, whatever. The part of Charbonnet that was so important was it kept Walker fresh. And that's why Walker took that big storm in the playoffs. Now I'm curious, now he's on the shelf. We'll see who comes back to the injury. George Helani actually had some nice moments, I thought, in preseason last year. I'm not saying he's a world beater or anything, but he's not bad. And then also, of course, their first round pick and Price. So they can manufacture a run game with those two, definitely. And they can get to that mid-level. I kind of wanted them to take an up or find an upgrade at right guard because that is their bugaboo still. And it still was in the playoffs. It's just like they managed to do other things. But they are trotting back the same offensive lineman, which is good in some ways. Charles Cross is a star, I think. Gray Zabel's a star. Abe Lucas is good when he's on the field. And then the center and right guard are kind of iffy. But we'll see. So again, more continuity leads the same way and leads to more success. I believe they return the same offensive line coach as well. And then the last thing, defensively, because we just talked a lot about their offense. Defensively, they kind of lost some role players or rotational players, I should say. I wouldn't say that Brian is a role player. He's a starter. But I actually liked Ronnie Thomas, who they signed in free agency. I think he's really smart, and I think that actually will fit that defense really well. And then they got Dante Fowler as a rotational guy. But some of the depth, they lost a little bit, but then they just added a couple draft picks that I think that'll help that out in free agency, kind of middle-class free agency signings that I think will help out as well. But, I think your point, though, and before we move on to the next team, when you see the room for growth from the young guys is where the Seahawks want to get to firmly a top 10 offense with a new offense coordinator. And that's what you brought up with Torrey Horton or Elijah Royal or somebody. So I think that's a great point to kind of like sum that all up as far as offensive growth from this team. But I think this is a playoff team. I think they're very, they're a contender. Yeah. I think they deserve to be talked about as a top five team still. So I get it, Seahawks fans. I get how that's frustrating, but I think it's just because you guys haven't made a big, crazy moves. That's why you kind of fallen by the wayside. But do think you guys are a very valid contender with returning all this. And Mike McDonald, probably the best defensive play caller in the NFL right now. So any closing thoughts before we get on to our other team that won 14 games that we're not talking about a ton so far this offseason? You want to get to that?
I think just to the point about the young guys stepping up, JSN was targeted. He had 36% target share, 35.8% if you want to round up. That is number one since 2015. The second place is DeAndre Hopkins, 33.7%. So it's actually number one by a pretty significant margin there. Number two, or number three is Michael Thomas, 33.1% in 2019. That was 2017 for Hopkins. Hopkins actually ran back in 2018 another 33% target share. So it's not impossible that JSN does this again, but you bake in some, you know, I'm not like negative against the player, but just a little regression there. The way you offset that is younger guys and other players step up. And that's where I think that's not an exciting thing to lead like a podcast with, is like, oh, Rams trade for Myles Garrett, Seahawks young players step up. Like, I guarantee you which one's getting more clicks here. That's why people aren't talking about the Seahawks, but it doesn't mean that it can't result, to your point, in a top five team once again next year. I think there's really no reason to doubt them going into 2026.
a second round year two tight end that barely played, and a second year fifth round receiver that not moving the needle for anybody. Hey, they're perhaps good players. Not. That's why I want to bring the,
they are.
This isn't just, they're not just ideas either. Like Horton was impactful as a player when he just has to be on the field. There's a reason he dropped to day buddy. Three because of injuries. I know. And then Arroyo, they're lining up Arroyo an ISO ball. So it's like as an isolated receiver, as a rookie tight end, like that, I don't know. There's indicators there that there could be some growth there. So I think it's worth reiterating that those two are important. Let's get, hey, you mentioned Michael Thomas. Who coached Michael Thomas in New Orleans? Sean Payton. Let's get to the Denver Broncos. How about that transition? 14-3, won the AFC West, made it to the Final Four in the snow globe. Bo Nix, of course, gets hurt. So we got to see that slop fest in the conference championship game in the snow. But their big move, God, I just throw it out. That game is just totally like, there's people that have studied it. They will pull the numbers from it. It truly is. I've learned from horse racing. It's like when you get weather, you just throw it out. If they play in another snow game, I'll use that as an example. But until they play in another snow game in the playoffs, that's not going to be my example to pull from. But anyways, traded for Jalen Waddle for a first rounder and a couple other picks. Promoted Davis Webb to offensive coordinator, play caller, I should say. And Sean Payton demoted himself, which is, to me, the most interesting part about this team right now, because he's never done that. And yeah, we can get to that. And then defensively, they re-signed a couple of their guys. They've lost some depth. John Franklin Myers, they lost him, and a couple other pieces up front. But they returned so much, especially on defense. Really, just their whole team. Like Waddle essentially is their, Franklin Myers as well. But like Waddle is like the biggest change, obviously. But really, look at the rest of their depth chart. It's a lot of the same. But with the Broncos right now, how are you feeling about them? Feel them as a contender? How have you felt about their offseason, where they're stacking up for 2026?
Yeah, they're another just kind of continuity team. And I think when you start to deep dive onto both of their units last year, offensively and defensively, which I think is maybe the more surprising one, considering I think they're like they're kind of billed as a defensive first team, and they were a great defense last year. At the same time, just pure stats wise, they were eighth in EPA per play defensively. And I think we'd probably imagine that they were like a top five set it and forget it unit. Mm-hmm. But that actually, to me, means that there's room to improve on that defensive side of the ball. And I think some of it's just like, what would you say? Like, what's the reason for that? I mean, they gave up some explosive plays, I think, at times. They weren't like total takeaway monsters necessarily. Although, again, I could be misremembering that. But to me, I felt like when I pulled up the stats to look at, like, they would have been like a higher ranking defense. But I think that just means that they can be better because they have a ton of great players. And I think it's a well designed unit. Obviously, they have Patrick Surtain, who's one of the best non-quarterbacks in the NFL. I think period point blank, like Nick Benito is a defensive player of the year type candidate every single year because he can accumulate that level of pressure and sacks. So I think that that unit could be better, and the offense absolutely could be better next year with, Bo Nix hopefully healthy, maybe taking a step in year three. But most importantly, I just think bringing in Jalen Waddle here is so, so massive. And, I think that was a trade that got talked about a ton at the time. And then like when I opened, coming off vacation, like opening fantasy rankings and like consensus ADP, like Jalen Waddle is so low among the wide receivers relative to like what I think. Like, I think he could be like a top 12 receiver in fantasy this year, which means he's going to have a monster year for the Denver Broncos and make their offense that much better. So I'm really high on that trade. And I think that it's almost kind of gotten under just a little bit, maybe not forgotten about, under discussed, but it's kind of like, that was a massive move for a receiver that I think is really underrated and could just have one of a rising tide lifts all boats type of effect on the entire offense. So I think both units, they're bringing back a ton of guys, continuity, of course, on, theoretically in the coaching staff on both sides of the ball. They won 14 games last year, and like there's room for improvement across the board. This is a team to absolutely be really excited about this year.
Yeah, and even if there's some regression, like one score games and everything like that, it's still like I look at this roster and, Bo Nix is a part of it, but like I look at this roster top to bottom, this might be the most complete roster in the NFL, the best roster in the NFL. O line, D line, just every position. I would say linebacker is probably and tight end are probably their weakest spots, but it's not like totally awful. It's more just like okay, but very good old line. The receiver room is really complimentary. I mean, Courtland Sutton, Jalen Waddle, you couldn't have a perfect X and Z together. Like those are ideal skill sets. And then you got, you know, our guy Pat Bryan as the dirty work power slot guy. They got other shot players and Mims in there. Like, they just got the basketball lineup as a receiver room is kind of overplayed. You know, it's a little trite, but it really is like that. And Sean Payton is kind of the guy that always likes that, where guys have really specific roles that they're very good at, and just those roles, and then kind of a little sprinkling on top of it. But that's what this room kind of is. And really, like you said, once the trade happened, I was like, oh, I really like this. And I had my thoughts, and then it was kind of like I put a pin in it, and then now I'm like revisiting those thoughts. Like, Brandon Cooks in the Saints offense when he got drafted at Oregon State is like the best stylistic fit to what how Jalen Waddle is going to get used in this offense. Little undersized. Waddle, of course, has world-class speed, but Cooks coming into league was extremely fast and so quick and agile and an extremely good route runner. One of the better ones I've ever watched. And so, like, I was watching some, I don't have the film. My film only goes back to 2018, sadly, but I tried to watch some 2016 Saints just for fun and just to see how Jalen Waddle's used. And man, get ready for some overs, get ready for some deep goes or deep posts, some deep corners, a lot more play action shot plays. And again, Sutton and Waddle fill out perfectly, where Sutton can be the outside intermediate guy, Waddle can be the downfield guy and the yak guy underneath. So it's kind of like they fill out each other's spaces perfectly. But if you look at that 2016 Saints, it's kind of some similar feelings here. Mark Ingram, so that could be Jonah Coleman / J.K. Dobbins. Brandon Cooks, which that could be Jalen Waddle. Young Michael Thomas, which we'll call Cortland Sutton here as younger Michael Thomas. Willie Snead, that can be Pat Bryant. Kobe Fleener, so that's the non-blocking tight end, Evan Ingram. Willie Snead, the immortal Willie Snead. Everybody knows Willie Snead.
I said some irresponsible things about Willie Snead after that 2016 season. I thought he was such a good route runner, but anyways, continue. Sorry, no one cares.
No, but everyone knows Willie Snead because he was on so many good teams. He was like on a lot of good teams for like a 5-6 year period. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, oh, there's that guy again.
900 yards,
like,
that season with the Saints in 16. Like, he was, it wasn't just a little idea. Like, he actually put it in the box score. It was really good.
Yeah, I know. And that's why I was looking at this offense, because like personnel wise, they kind of match decently. I don't know. I'm saying Pat Bryan's going to go for 900 yards, but, and then Tim Hightower's the other running back, but I don't know. I get that vibe, and I can see the shot plays already coming up. I'm very high on Jonah Coleman. You know, I should say very high. I liked him because I always liked this kind of bully ball back that's good in protection, the singles doubles hitter as a running back. But, you know, I actually really, really like his fit with the Broncos. I kind of even said that before the draft, I would like him here, and it was the perfect landing spot because just the perfect complement to RJ Harvey, who's not great between the tackles. And also Coleman's just so good in pass protection. And then Dobbins got another injury. He had a Lynch Frank foot injury, so you can't just rely on him at this point in time. But defensively, got a lot of depth coming, got talent. Jahdae Barron, their first round pick last year, barely even has to play, apparently. They still lack needle moving linebacker talent. Jonah Ellis is another interesting name I'm kind of like keeping an eye on for their defense. It's kind of like a young guy who's got some pass rush juice. But man, this is a really good team. It's one of those where, you know, Bo Nix, I consider kind of more, you know, outside the top 16, but still fine enough for this offense. I'm curious if they add new layers to kind of continue to develop him. But I think they got to create more explosives in the passing game, attack downfield more. But who do you call to do that? One of the guys that generates the most explosives since he's entered the league, Jalen Waddle. And also just screen game could work perfectly with him. Coleman's good in screens. Yeah, there's a lot to like with the Broncos right now. It's kind of one of these where it's like I put a pin in them and I revisit them. I'm like, yeah, this is a good team. This is a really good team.
No, it's such a good point. And I think so your film goes back to 2018. My charting database for reception perception goes back to 2014. I was just looking up while you were talking about this, and that, like, one thing I didn't love about Brandon Cooks in his first 2 years is that he actually had to play a good bit as the on-ball receiver in that offense because he was the fastest guy. He was the best vertical guy. And then in 2000, so the first 2 years he was on ball more than he was off of it. And then in his third season, 2016, the season that you're referencing, his rate of snaps on the line of scrimmage that I charted was like 31%, which actually ended up being the lowest of his entire career. And that coincided with Michael Thomas coming in 2016, 87% snaps outside and on the line of scrimmage, 69%. Meanwhile, Willie Snead in the slot, 77.4%, and on the line of scrimmage for 41% of his snaps. So this is the key thing that I think people have lost about the Jalen Waddle stuff, is that he is, you mentioned him as a Z receiver. He hasn't played Z receiver in like since Tyreek Hill arrived in Miami, because Tyreek Hill has to do all the fun, like off ball move around stuff. And that left Jalen Waddle. Even last year, they didn't really change up his deployment, because who else are they going to put out there? Like Malik Washington? Like, no. So
whoever's starting for them right now, which is the problem we're going to talk about in a second.
It's a whole other thing. So Waddle, like being detached off the line of scrimmage, is just going to make him that much better and that much more explosive. Yeah. And he's already a really good and explosive player. So yeah, I really like that 2016 Saints comparison, because we saw that with Cooks, and that was something like through his first 2 years. Like, he really needs a little bit of a change in role to be his best self. And I think that's when we saw him be his best self. Season, career high snaps in the slot from a percentage standpoint, and off ball. And I think that's about to happen to Jalen Waddle, which just can't be understated. It's going to be massive for this team and for this individual player.
And it's the perfect example. And we always talk, I mean, you have to talk about this all the time. Who are the elite receivers? Who are the 1Bs? Who are the, you know, like, you have to tier these guys. This is the perfect example of what I call two, either high end twos or low end ones. Where this is the situation where you want that. Like, usually you don't want Courtland Sutton being your number one, and then you got kind of, but if you get kind of, and then you don't want Jalen Waddle just being your only guy, you kind of need a little something to help him. But you get this, and it's like this, it's one of these situations where they lift each other up, because of they just have that synergy together. So I'm glad you had the numbers behind that, because it's more an eye test for me looking at that, because that's Waddle to me is the epitome of the Z. He's a flanker. Like, he is the classic flanker that you move and put in motion, which is a Z. So, the last little thing I was going to look at too was, or mention here, is the other thing, watching those old Brandon Cooks games, how many jet sweeps he got used on. And that is something that came a lot from Oregon State. Mike Riley ran an offense that used a lot of jet sweeps, and Paul Chryst, an offense I'm very familiar with, it was the same offense, and he got used as an X in that. And so that's probably why they transitioned to that. But does Waddle get used on some jet sweeps? Troy Franklin, I didn't mention him. He can be a nice auxiliary guy. But just looking at the receivers, you know, Marvin Mims got some carries last year. But when Marvin Mims is on the field, you kind of know what you're getting. Gadgets and shot plays, you know, as a defense. Oh, Mims is on the field? All right, gadget shots. What if Waddle's on the field 80% of the snaps? Well, now it could be a run play. It could be a jet sweep off the run play. It could be a play action off the jet sweep. It just expands the offense even a little bit more. So I think... too long, didn't read. Football 301, really liked the Jalen Waddle trade for the Broncos. And I'm pretty high on the Broncos right now, even if I do think there's going to be some natural regression for some of the things. But still, this is an easy, to me, double-digit win team that is going to be competing in the AFC pretty easily. So, fun team to talk about. But we're going to take our first break. But before we do that, shout out to Game Time. Check out the Game Time app for great prices on tickets. I was going to do that if the United States won, but they didn't. But you still can, to check out every good sporting match on the Game Time app. We are going to take our first break, and we'll come back with a few more teams there, maybe going under the radar this offseason. See you guys in a sec. All right, we are back. We'll get to a few more teams that got under the radar, including another division champ. We've started with two division champs that have gone under the radar with the discussions on Football 301. Let's get to the Carolina Panthers, a team that you have no familiarity with or no feelings for whatsoever as an impartial neutral analyst. But they did go 8-9 last season.
I do not. I have no feelings. I know I'm not partial. Let's be on the record here.
I get that all the time with the Vikings. I get it both ways. I get it. If I'm negative on the Vikings, people go, well, he's just mad at the Vikings because they fired his dad. And if I'm nice about the Vikings, people go, well, that's because his dad used to coach for the Vikings. That's why he's not. So Vikings chatter for me is kind of maybe Panthers chatter for you. But they won the division. The NFC South. I guess I don't know if you call it a hard-fought battle, a war of attrition.
Falling ass backwards.
Falling ass backwards. Pirates stumbling, rumbling, bumbling into the playoff end zone. But they made some moves on defense. Their offense had some moments. Bryce Young had a couple strong games, probably just, you know, at least better games, I should say, in the second half of the year. But really, the defense is where I think they can make the most improvement, because it's been so dire for a few seasons now. And that's with me saying liking their defensive coordinator and some of the stuff that he does. But Jalen Phillips, they signed to a big money deal. Devin Lloyd, they signed to a big money deal on defense. And then on offense, they signed Rashid Walker at tackle to a one-year deal. They extended Jalen Coker, and they drafted Monroe Freeling, which I really liked that draft pick, as well as Chris Brazel from Tennessee, and then Lee Hunter from Texas Tech defensive tackle as well. But man, this is, you know, this is a team, the whole division, the NFC South is going to be, that preview episode is going to be, it's going to be something because each of these teams is a long discussion. But the Panthers on July 7th, as we record this, Matt, where are you at with them? How do you feel about them? Do you think the defense improved enough? Do you think the offense is legit? I'll bring up some stats after you, or after you're done talking, maybe you have some as well, but where are you at with the Panthers right now?
Yeah, I think the offense is weirdly the harder thing to talk about because it's totally in theory, and they're another team that obviously is not nearly as big of a like shock to read the headline, because we're talking about Dave Canales giving up play calling versus Sean Payton giving up play calling. But this is an offensive first head coach who's called plays and got the job because he did a great work with the season in Tampa Bay as their play caller. He's giving it up to Brad Edzik. So again, that's like more theory. I think the defense, though, it's hard to argue that on paper it's not going to be a better unit for some of the additions that they made. Now, they were 23rd in EPA per play last year, which was definitely a step forward, 15th actually in success rate last year. So they already started to move forward in that regard. And then, yeah, adding Jalen Phillips. I liked the Devin Lloyd contract. I think when we talked about this previously, like I liked him getting that deal maybe a little bit more than you did. I think that, you know, we'll see about it, whether like exactly what type of player he's going to be, but I think that was fine enough money, 45 over three. So I think adding those two guys in the mix, like Mike Jackson coming off really underrated strong season, JC Horn, I think is settled into being a really good starting corner, one of the better corners in the league. I think this defense can be an average to maybe even slightly above average unit, which would be a huge win for Giro Evero, who's like, I'm with you. I think he's a good coach. Just the talent has been just so hit or miss there, and a lot more miss than hit lately.
Yeah, I know that the defense is like, it can't, not, it's not like it can't get worse, but it's like you said, they needed talent. They finally got some talent. They actually, like, you look at it, they have two like legit all pro candidates. Derek Brown, they got J.C. Horn. Like, that's a decent start. Like, you're like, okay, I can work with this. Safety-wise, you know, Morgan's not bad. Like, they're not bad. Like, that's the rest of the room. Mike Jackson had a very
– it's not very horrific. And it's been horrific at times in the safeties in Carroll. Like, it's been brutal at times. I think, Morgan is good enough. And, like, even – you're right. I think the two headliners are J.C. Horn and Derek Brown, the, like, potential all-pro type candidates. And then they paid – maybe like all pro money for Jalen Phillips. He's not, I don't even mean that type of player, but you paid to fill in that like next level there, along with, I think, Mike Jackson, who had like that type of season, like Lloyd Phillips and Jackson, like that type of season. I think you're hoping that tier is solidified around two stars in Brown and of course JC Horn.
Yeah, you're just trying to make it so the rest is filled in. So it's like, okay, other teams can't just avoid Horn or run away from Brown. Like, we have to make the other guys valid enough. And it's like, I like, they signed Bobby Brown last year, and he actually was okay. Some nose tackle stuff, but that's why they drafted Lee Hunter. Okay, let's give a guy that's another bruiser that can open up things for Brown. I understand that line of thinking. Another guy they drafted that was, me and Chuck both kind of came to the same agreement with him, was Nick Scordon from Texas A&M, was because his Purdue tape was good. Transfers to Texas A&M. Like, so like going into 2025 or 2024 college season, he was a top 15, top 20 player for me. Then he kind of just fell, I think, for everybody. Once he went to A&M, got too big. Watch him last year, kind of has figured out his weight. And I'm not saying, oh my God, this guy's back to being what I consider, he was like a blue chip prospect for me for a minute. He's not back to that, but I think this is a good starter here. Like, he's a candidate for a breakout player, I think, on this defense. So if they get something out of him, that's, okay, there's some interesting pieces up front here with some different kind of styles as well. You mentioned Phillips. He's just a pterodactyl. His pressure numbers were insane last year too. Health has just always been Phillips's thing. That's why he was able to be traded. That's why he's a free agent. It's just health. If he's on the field, he's impactful. And when you get a guy that can create pressure as an edge and make the quarterback step up, and then you have an all-pro caliber defensive tackle in Brown, who is much in theory, I see how this is going to work. Like, I can see Devin Lloyd is going to get blitzed a lot. Everett likes bringing the mics and bringing the inside linebackers. He's actually good at that. That Lloyd was getting talked about as a mini micro Micah Parsons, which I had me pulling my hair out when he was coming out of Utah. But he's got some pass rush chops as well. So there's, again, in theory, I can see how this is all working. Offensively, really just comes down to Bryce Young taking the next step. I mean, which completely frank about it. Like, him just being average for an entire season is enough for this team to win the division. Because I think their receiver room is, I love their top two, and T-Mac and Jalen Coker. I love them. You've mentioned Brazel before as a kind of a great fit, because even if he's just a field stretcher, that actually works with their other two starters. Now Xavier Leggett can be whatever you want. Like, he can be a runway guy, but I like that. And Jimmy Horn actually had some moments, got overhyped a little bit, but actually had some more moments as kind of like a gadget juice guy. And then John Metchie's your dirty work guy. That's pretty complimentary receiver room that I like. And then running back room, Chuba Hubbard, Jonathan Brooks, like, that's a pretty solid number two, top two. Their run game fell off a cliff last year. Second half of the year, they're 30th in design run rate or run success rate. They were 9th in yards before contact per run, but 31st in yards after contact per run, which is, I have to study that to see what happened there. And then the old line, you know, Ike Ekwonu is coming off an injury and probably won't be able to play, but they at least armed themselves with an auxiliary plan or a contingency plan. So Rasheed Walker can get you through this year. And the Monroe Freeling was my number one tackle. Like, I thought he should have gone a top 10. I understood why he fell a little, but because of just, like, you know, being a late riser and all that stuff. And the offensive line was just all over the place this year as far as consensus. But I love that draft pick. And they actually could do some things offensive line wise. Center wise, I still have some questions, but at least tackle wise, they have a cool plan. So it's weird. 2026 Panthers, I'm not super high on. I like the moves they did. 2027 Panthers, kind of high on, but also I just got to figure out what they're doing at quarterback. But I know they've set themselves up for a good franchise plan. I really do think that. But the biggest question is the quarterback, which is, you know, I don't know. It's funny. The plan is working. It's coming together. Mm-hmm. It's coalescing. It's just, yeah, the quarterback is going to be my big thing. And I know people think I'm hard on him, but give me a stat other than the five deep balls he throws. You know, it's like,
yeah.
Eye test has shown me one thing, and there's no stat I can point at that's going like, yeah, I can point at that. So this is where I'm at with him.
I really don't think it should be even controversial to say that, yeah, I mean, he's got a lot to prove, does Bryce Young. Yep. I mean, just statistically what he's been. And it's not like, oh, this is, you know, like we've said with Cam Ward, there's no stat to point to for Cam Ward, you know, after 1 year. We're 3 years now into the Bryce Young thing, and obviously it's not been that productive. So what can we do to make it more productive in year four? And I do think this is one of those teams that really is, as the entire league and certainly the you know, media space is chasing the tail here as well, just talking about how can teams get bigger and heavier and more tight ends. Like, I think this is the team maybe that's best set up to zig while everybody else zags, which is what you want to do. Yeah. Like, you don't want to be in 2026, everybody trying to be the 13 personnel team. You want to be Sean McVay in 2025 being the 13 personnel team. You want to be ahead. Because
what do you think defenses are doing all offseason? They're preparing for 13 personnel.
Exactly. Like, you're not going to catch everybody by surprise when you do this, and you may have only done it because, like, Puka Nacua was hurt in week six or whatever. So, like, that's like a whole nother podcast talking point here. But I do think that with the Panthers, like you mentioned those receivers, and I'm glad you brought up Jimmy Horn, who is probably never going to be like a highly targeted player or anything, but he was so useful for this team just in like being in motion at the snap and creating leverage for a big dude like T-Mac, who, you know, is like the outside on ball receiver at the snap of the ball, but he's not that guy by the time the play starts because, you know, Horn has ripped off the leverage breaking to the outside. So you create a lot of stuff there for him. And like, now you have Coker, who's a baller. I mean, I'm the chief bandwagon, you know, driver of the Jalen Coker thing. So like, I'm there on that. I mean, Brazel, I think being able to be a space creator. Yeah. I'm the mule, baby. Saddle me up for the Jalen Coker hype train. But yeah, man, like, I think Brazel being a field stretcher and like, is there a number three option? I can get behind that. And Bryce Young, in 2024, I know I've mentioned this stat before, he had 96 attempts out of empty that year. Remember, he was benched in 2024. That dropped down to 88 last season when he only missed one game due to injury. So like, and he was very productive. Like that's maybe the stat you can point to. Like he had a 0.11, like a positive EPA per dropback actually when they went into empty in 2024, like spread things out. I think he's the type of guy that you want to get in the gun and you want to do like the point guard quick attack stuff as opposed to this big heavy condensed, like chuck the football down the field. Not that like Young can throw over the middle of the field. Like he can do some of those from a conceptual standpoint, but again, I think he's just a different type of quarterback than, you know, maybe even like what Canales wants to work with, and maybe that's why he's giving up play calling, right? So I think that there's just a lot to talk about here that's all sort of theory and guesswork, but I do think this is a team that's really well set up to go against the trend, and I think that could be very interesting for their outlook this season on offense.
Because you look at their receiver room is big. They are huge. It's a gigantic receiver room. I should have looked at the average weight for them. Like Jimmy Horn's not big, but the rest of them
he's
are.
He's the only
like,
one. It's these big hulking dudes and then a little Jimmy Horn.
Little Horn. But that's what you want. Like that's what like Sean Payton kind of created with the Broncos room. Franklin's a little skinnier, but Sutton and Pat Bryant and all these guys. And then you get Waddle in there. Then the smaller guy kind of fits in. No, but I think all those guys, like if they want to, they could go 10 personnel and get to real run looks if they wanted to, like because they have enough size and willing blockers. Like Coker, McMillan's okay as a blocker. When he does have effort, he is a good blocker. Coker's a legit good blocker.
He's legit, like, yeah.
McMillan played volleyball. Come on, let's go. You know? But and even Brazel, I didn't like use another guy.
Who said that like leading up to the draft, right? Like even people in the league were like, McMillan, he plays like a volleyball player, complimentary and derogatory.
It was very much like that. Yeah, I know. And I even interviewed him in the Super Bowl. He goes, I think my blocking is underrated. I go, no, I think I even said it. I was like, it's properly rated. Like, yeah. You're okay.
Come on, like,
let's not go too far. We'll pull up some Malachi Fields. We'll pull up some of us dribbling, and then you can see some run blocking right there. But even Brazel, who I kind of got lower on throughout the process. I think he went exactly where he should have gone. Didn't like him for everybody. Yes. Love him for the Panthers because it's just that's the skill set they needed. I would have liked him in Arizona too. That's another team that I got to get the Cardinals in here because that was another team that needed some deep speed to open up their burly baldness. When you have these guys like McMillan and Coker that thrive intermediate areas, you need to create that space. So it's kind of what you're saying with Jimmy Horn. But last thought too, tight end room is kind of weirdly shaped, but I like Tommy Tremble in his role, but I got to reiterate, I really like Mitchell Evans. Like Mitchell Evans is like, if he's a free agent in your dynasty league, swoop him up right now, people, because he actually has some Y ability. He can block in line, like he's good. And also he's got good hands. He's going to be a nice auxiliary receiver, but again, fits kind of their personnel perfectly. So got to give him a shout out because I just like me some Mitchell Evans. I like
that. If they're going to run out of 10 personnel as you're talking about, like you need to stick the dirty work Y guy in there. And I think that's why Mitchell Evans probably leads that group in snaps this year.
Yeah. All right, here we go. We'll go on to another team that for a while looked like they were rolling. They also went 8-9. This is the difference between the AFC South and the NFC South. They finished third. This is the Indianapolis Colts, who after the first half of the season had to do a recant pod, recant statements, had to pull up old clips of me being wrong about the offense and Daniel Jones. And then they kind of just teetered off. Daniel Jones got multiple injuries on top of Achilles. And I think people are still waving away a little too quickly for a guy that, although he didn't really rely on his athleticism last year, it's not nothing that it's a December Achilles injury that kind of, so I feel like, I don't know. Some people just kind of aren't bringing that up enough, but probably won't start the season. If he does, he'll be very limited, but he might, Daniel Jones. But also re-signed Alec Pierce to an extension as well, which was deserved. They also traded Michael Pittman Jr., the other receiver, to the Steelers. Zaire Franklin as well for Colby Wooden. They drafted a couple of spine defenders and CJ Allen linebacker and AJ Hawley. I actually really like those picks that they made on the defensive side of the ball. But you're looking at this Colts offense. Doesn't matter who's starting the quarterback, whether it's Danley Jones or Riley Leonard slash Anthony Richardson, which is if either of those two are starting, then you know who's super interested in that offense? This guy. This guy right here who has one flower still on Anthony Richardson Island. And I would say, I don't know if I have more than a house on Riley Leonard Island. Yeah. I think I own half the island to myself on Riley Leonard. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I wouldn't mind a 4-week stint of one of those two starting just for my own interest of watching the Colts offense. But I am interested in how they use their skill players because moving away from Pittman, they traded A.D. Mitchell as well in the Sauce Gardner trade. I'm just curious how they deploy this personnel as someone that's so high on Josh Downs. I like him as well, but someone I know you are driving the Josh Downs train as well. How do you kind of envision this Colts offense this year with the kind of this new reworked personnel?
This seems so tough to talk about, man. And I feel like we talked about them.
I have some theories, but yeah, it's tough.
I feel like we talked about them so much from September to March. Because they get off to this hot start and then Daniel Jones gets hurt. And then, let's talk about the fact that they, pulled Grandpa Phillip Rivers off the chunky Phillip Rivers. Yes, no disrespect. Yes. He wasn't playing in the NFL, like pulled him off the high school coaching ranks to come in here and play quarterbacks. So we talked about them a ton then. And then it's like, what are they going to do contract wise with Daniel Jones and Alec Pierce? They get that done. And then we just kind of stopped talking about them. So it's just like so much going on there that they don't have a first round pick. Obviously they're not going to be a big discussion point during the NFL draft. And now it's just kind of like, all right, this is what's left in the wreckage of all of that is this team on offense that we're looking at right now. And not only does Daniel Jones have a big injury question, Alec Pierce has a huge injury question coming into and I think that's worth discussing here too. Like, he didn't want to have this ankle surgery seemingly, and then he did have it, and his timeline is kind of up in the air. And this receiver room just gets so light after Pierce and Downs, who Downs had like the worst season of his career from a statistical perspective. I thought he was a little banged up at times. He was banged up at times even coming into the year. This is kind of how the Josh Downs experience goes every year, is you just get report after report that he's lighting it up in training camp. He's set up for a breakout year, and then he gets hurt in training camp and he comes into the year slow. That's exactly what's happened each of the last 2 years. But man, yeah, like I think there's, I think Downs could be awesome, and I don't think he needs to be this slot only kind of only two receiver set or only three receiver set player. Like, to me, he's the type of guy, and I think he's bulked up a little bit. You see clips of him from OTAs where his quads are definitely bigger than they were before. You could tell I don't think he weighs 171 pounds anymore like he's listed at, and I think he could serve to be a little bit bigger and maybe sacrifice a tiny bit of quickness, because what makes him special is the ability to play above the rim and just his route running. So I don't think that him being bigger should really hurt either of those two things. But even just beyond, we get like, yeah, you want me to talk about Josh Downs? I'm happy to talk about Josh Downs, but like, look at the rest of the room. I mean, look at the rest of the room. Like, it's barren after those two guys, and the guy
that's
that they just
spent,
$114 million on is injured right now in the offseason. So, there's talk about them adding a veteran receiver. Keenan Allen has familiarity with Shane Steichen from the LA days.
That's another slot guy.
Do we get what happened with Ladd McConkey last year in LA, where it's like two kind of duplicative skill sets, and then you end up cutting off your younger guy at the knees to satisfy a very, like, a still a useful player in Keenan Allen, but a hyper specific player. And I don't know, that's just a little difficult there as well. So Tyler Warren's great too. Haven't mentioned him as well, but it's just, there's a big drop off, I think, from like even the only kind of, do we even consider Pierce to be the proven player of the bunch here? He had 84 targets last year. I keep coming back to the word, I don't know. And there's a lot of unknown on this, on this offense right now.
As someone that always makes the cross sport comparisons, it's like building the offense around like a 3-point only shooter and like a microwave point guard that's like a 6-man. So it's like, I don't know, Ray Allen and Jamal Crawford. someone will have a better kind of pairing for me than that too.
Not me, but yeah.
Yeah. But I tweeted this morning. I don't know if you saw it, but I looked at all the plays where there's only two receivers on the field for the Colts last year, and it was Alec Pierce and Downs were the only two receivers on the field. And it,
how many plays
it was
there,
exactly
like
what I envisioned. It was 16 pass plays, but eight of them were successful, and four of them were explosive. So hey, let's just extrapolate that by about what? By about 40 times. But it showed to me, and to get to create a slot role, I guess, two tight end looks. And I know this has kind of been a big talking point. I know in your world, especially with fantasy, and you know, everyone's trying to figure out the two receiver looks and if there's an edge in some offenses and everything, is you create what they call slot formations. A slot formation is two tight ends to one side and two receivers to the other side. Or if you're an I formation, it's called I right slot. So I right is the Y goes to the right, they follow the lead, right? The Z receiver typically goes right, they follow the tight end. But when you say slot, it tells the Z to go to the opposite side. So if Alec Pierce is the X, Downs is the Z, I say hip right slot, now Downs is in the slot. So this is a classic formation. It's a classic play action formation. It's something Shane Steichen has used before, which I think is pretty interesting, because if they want to get those two on the field, like that's kind of the way to do it. And if you're worried about Downs being an outside receiver, this is the way to kind of create slot looks out of two receiver sets. But I will say the Colts kind of underrated their tight end room. I mean, Warren is Warren, you know, you can be very creative with him, but even Mo Alie-Cox now and Alex Ingold, I think actually Mo Alie-Cox is a great blocker. Alec Ingold is the fullback. Alex Ogletree actually has some two-way ability, but why I'm bringing that up is, you know, they are a team that can naturally run the 13 personnel stuff, the 12 personnel stuff. Shane Steichen has that Norv Turner background. Those slot formations are the Norv Turner formation. You watch any old Phillip Rivers highlights, just watch it. It's just purely slot formations like this. You know who also got used in those offenses and got used kind of as when you're in slot, it makes the nub tight end almost like an X. Pretty good way to use Tyler Warren. You use him isolated, then you get the slot with Downs in the slot, and then you get Pierce on the outside. So I'm just throwing this out that you have to get a little creative to get the best five out there. And I think that's what they're going to lean into. So if anyone's curious, I tweeted it, what those plays look like, and you can check them out. And the four I tweeted were all four explosive plays, all to Pierce, but they're all four play action, long developing plays.
One's to Downs. I'm watching this right now as we're talking. I think one against the Texans is the big, like maybe it's a post route or something to Downs.
Yeah.
But they're all Downs. Yes, they're all in breakers. They're all I think all of them that I'm watching here are all in breakers over the middle of the field. And it's all like, the good thing about this is, you know, it's like, well, you're cutting the field in half. Well, Daniel Jones is kind of the guy that you want to, you know, get the quick release and make things like exactly. Like a crossbow, just crank it back and let it fly, baby. I think that's what you're looking at here. It can work. Like you're right. You have to get creative, but it can work with two guys who are very different in Downs and Pierce. But yeah, I just think Downs as an individual player, he's much more like a Tyler Lockett type to me, as opposed to the, like, and Lockett obviously was a guy that they did a lot to get him in those two receiver looks over the course of his time in Seattle. So yeah, I it can be done. You just got to be creative. Luckily, I think Shane Steichen is the type of guy to get it done.
Right. And then you still got Jonathan Taylor. Pretty dang good. I think Warren's going to be, that's why they draft him. He's going to be a key cog in this, because how they use him, and he's not the greatest blocker, but like they can use him as kind of like this. The Swiss Army knife is so overused, but truly use him to unlock everybody else. Like, I think his role will really have a big impact how everyone else gets used. So that's why you draft him in the top 15. is hopefully they have that kind of thing to make everybody else better. But yeah, I don't even know who the receiver three is. The other formation, you
Ashton
can see in one
Doolin
of those.
Is the guy they're talking about now.
God, you know, they've talked about him for like 5 years now, though.
I know.
I remember bringing him up so long ago. I was even looking I can look at twin tight end plays on Next Gen Stats, and like, you know, middle of the pack twin tight end formation usage the Colts were last year. It's something that's in their bag. The first year that when Gardner Minshew had to be a quarterback, they used a lot of it, and they used the RPOs off of that as well. So just kind of be on the lookout for that. I will say before we move on, defensively, I think the front seven's weird mix of parts, but kind of interesting, kind of works actually. Like Leo Tulatu, like, can be the ace pass rusher. He's okay. But Arden Key is the matchup pass rusher. You got some size in the middle. Colby Wood and Michael Clemens, they added them some burliness up front. They finished middle of the pack last year. One thing I did look at, I like the CJ Allen trade again, or draft pick again. I like the Halsey. I think he's a cool, fun, instinctive player. What I wanted to bring up before we move on to the next team, with Sauce Gardner, again, we can say they overspent on Sauce Gardner. We know that. But they did need a corner really bad. Now, with Sauce Gardner, because they had Sauce Gardner and Traverius Ward on the other side, at least for a little bit, they changed their defense of what they ran under Lou Anarumo. They ran a one high defense, meaning cover one or cover three, at 58.5%, which would have been the fifth highest in the league last year. Without Sauce Gardner on the field, they ran one high at 48%, which was 24th. So they become like a bottom eight single high defense without Sauce Gardner and a top five single high defense with Sauce Gardner. And you would think that impacts the pass. They're kind of the same pass-wise effectiveness, about average. What it did affect, though, was the run. Because single high, and this is why I laugh when people use box count numbers, single high means you naturally load the box with one more defender. And when you have the burliness, you can go single high. This is why you want ace corners, because, hey, we can load the box and we can leave these corners isolated. The proof was in the pudding. You know, the run defense, yards before contact per run, with Sauce Gardner on the field, all these single high defenses, the Colts would have ranked second in yards before contact per run, 0.83. Without him on the field, when they ran all the two high, 1.4, they're ranked middle of the pack. So top five, top two, as far as impacting the run, hitting the ball carrier, and just kind of middling without him. So it's funny how we think about this sometimes with receivers, and getting cover two can help the run game. A really good corner can help the run defense, because not him, them tackling, but as far as now we can run man coverage, we can run cover three, and we can just load the box with extra bodies. So I just thought that was an interesting quirk about Sauce Gardner as well. But let's get to the Washington Commanders. They finished 5-12 last year, kind of had a season from hell, made kind of a push, a lot of offseason moves. Jaden Daniels got hurt. Everyone got hurt. We've got a whole saga right now with a receiver that's not even on their team, Brandon Ayuk. Oh. But they offseason moves, they moved on from Cliff Kingsbury. They promoted David Blau, his first time calling plays. He was like a backup quarterback about like 5 years ago. They made a bunch of splashes on defense, including Adolfo Owe, Leo Chanel. They signed Nick Cross as well, Rasul Douglas, tight end Chigokwankwo, a signing I did like. I'll talk about that in a sec. And they lost some old names, some familiar names, but I actually don't think their impact will be felt, or their absence will be felt that much. That's Bobby Wagner, Austin Eckler, Zach Ertz, Deebo Samuel. Drafted Sonny Styles, love that draft pick, and Antonio Williams as well on day two from Clemson. Matt, easy question for you. Where are you at with the Commanders? Where are you at with this team and their roster right now?
Yeah, I think that there were so many different paths for this team to take coming into the offseason, because they really need a ton of help on both sides of the ball. And, you know, I think selfishly, like, I wanted them to come in and just hammer offense and like get a ton of help around Jaden Daniels to kind of make sure this third season was a takeoff season after a step back last year with injuries. But they didn't really do that. They kind of decided that what would help them is just a change of system on offense. And I kind of agree with that, put a pin in that, and then really just hammer talent on the defensive side of the football, like Sonny Styles in the first round, Adolfo Owe, you mentioned. Like that, to me, I think has been the way that they want to go, right? Like, let's make sure this defense is not that bad again, because this is Dan Quinn. The defense is his. Obviously, they bring in Jones to be the defensive coordinator this year. You know, are they going to bring in some of those like Brian Flores ideas? I think that will be really fascinating to watch. But overall, like, I like this approach here, because to me, just, I think Cliff Kingsbury is not as bad as maybe some of, and you know, maybe we've been these guys at times, like the naysayers have necessarily painted him to be, but I think he's like a get your young quarterback on base, but like you're not going to round third with Cliff Kingsbury as your offensive coordinator. Like, you're never going to get to home base with him, because I think it's just so limiting. And like, I made this point to Justin Boone on the fantasy show when, you know, because he was talking about Terry McLaurin and, you know, as a bounce back candidate this year. And he's like, you know, I know the new offensive coordinator said, David Blau said they're going to move him around, but every new offensive coordinator said that. I'm like, yeah, except this time, like it will not be possible to move around less like move your number one receiver around less than Cliff Kingsbury does. And I know that's, people get tired of hearing about that, but it just is so limiting and so unusual for an NFL offense. And it's a it's a problem in the passing game. Like the run games with Cliff have been pretty decent. So I think they might end up keeping a lot of that. David Blau obviously was there last year. He knows what they were doing. I believe Anthony Lynn is still on the coaching staff as well. He was the running back coach, run game coordinator, I believe. Tell me if I'm wrong there. But again, and they'll keep some of the run game stuff pretty similar. Maybe just involve the quarterback less as a designed runner than they have at times. And I think the passing game is going to look and feel very, very different this year, which is a welcome welcome result based on, again, what it was last season for sure. So defense, more talented, offense, new ideas. I think that's a pretty good direction for the Commanders coming into this year.
It's the right direction. They just did it a year late. That's where I'm at. And that's tough. It's like one of these things where previewing from this year, but as far as like, this is what they needed to do, but I thought they should have arrived at this conclusion a year ago, but c'est la vie. But I do think that with the Commanders is, I agree. I think they needed to evolve their offense, and Cliff, God, you nailed it. He does a great job of, I wouldn't say spoon feeding, but streamlining things for the offense and streamlining things for the quarterback. It's not my cup of tea as far as an offensive attack, but there are benefits to it. And that's why I think Cliff Kingsbury went to the Rams is interesting, you know, and I've talked about that. Check out the episode at some point, wrote about somewhere. But I think with that is that there's a limited ceiling. You automatically cap yourself if you're going to operate your offense like that, unless you have just all world talent everywhere. Commanders do not have all world talent everywhere. And I think Jane Daniels, his Arizona State offense is more what to look at and how he'll operate than anything he did at LSU or even early in his NFL career, which is means a little more under center, a little bit more play action. He's going to have to work more over the middle. And I think he's actually been decent at that, especially to his tight end, which was Zach Ertz. I'm going to talk about Chig in a second. But I do think that that's where you can see the growth and not just relying on iso ball to Terry. At LSU, he had BTJ and Neighbors. So I think that kind of just similar to what the Eagles are going through. But I think Jaden has at least shown to me that he can operate a little bit like this. It's not his preference. He also has to learn how to not always scramble when he does get pressured. He has one of the highest scramble rates and run rates when he is pressured or moved off his spot like ever. That has to change. Like, we've already seen him getting hurt multiple ways of getting hurt, which is scarier, I think, than just like, oh man, he hurt his hamstring again, you know, hurt that again. It's like, well, when you're getting hurt in all these different ways, you gotta change your style a little bit, which is kind of what we knew. Run game wise, though, I think their O-line had some real moments last year. I know they moved on for their O-line coach, but Laramie Tunsil. Chris Paul's not bad. Still don't get why they moved on for Biotish, but they're going with Algaretti. But also Josh Connerly, their first round pick last year, was dang good in the run game, especially at the end of the year. Passing wise, he's okay, which is kind of, again, what I knew coming out of Oregon. He might end up a guard, to be honest, but he's really good in the run game. And John Bates, really good run blocker. Luke McCaffrey, really good run blocker. Tyami Brown, back again, really good run blocker. See what happens with Antonio Williams. He might get force fed a lot. I like him, but I think he's slot only and he's not really the most gritty guy. He had some moments, actually. But I do think that I do want to talk about Chig a little bit, because Chig had a nice rookie year, I believe. Had some nice stats there. Kind of fell by the wayside, which just kind of happens in Tennessee. But I actually think he's going to have some nice synergy with Jane Daniels. Daniels and Zach Ertz had like really good chemistry together. And I think Chig is a better player than Zach Ertz in 2026 or 2025, at least at the very least more explosive. I just looked at the last 2 years, Chig 1.3 yards per route, Ertz 1.33 explosives per route, Chig 2.3%, Ertz 1.8%. But then here it is, yak per reception. And the Eagles fans know this. This is the joke about Zach Ertz that he didn't force a missed tackle like ever. Yak per reception, Zach Ertz 2.7, Chig 5.3. So if Jane Daniels is going to attack that way, all right, let's add a little more juice to the position. So that was one signing I really did like. And they have John Bates on the roster, who's a dang good blocker. So Chig doesn't have to be the Y. He can be the auxiliary tight end. So there's maybe one way where this offensive personnel kind of makes a little bit more sense than maybe at first blush, because that receiver room is tight. And if, you know, and Brandon Ayuk seem like they're playing, and I don't know if that's a work, like the little fight him and Jane Daniels are having right now or what. Did they work themselves into a shoot? Like, I don't know what's going on with there, but I can say it's not what I want to see. I think that's pretty safe to say. It's not what I want to see out of my team and my potential quarterback and receiver pairing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you mentioned the defense, it's Dan Quinn's show. They have 11 new names among their top, they're two deep on defense. Usually you want to microwave a defense. Again, this is something I thought they should have done last year, but here we are. I like the Leo Chanel signing. I love the Sony Styles draft pick. I think that's going to be great. Chaseon had an interesting year last year. I actually thought he was a pretty good last year, and they got some beef up there to help him out on top of the big signing, Adafa Owe. Charles Amenhu was an interesting signing as well. I don't think the defense is going to be good, but it'll be much better than last year when it was absolutely atrocious and very predictable. That was the thing too. Get Bobby Wagner here, I can pick on him here. Get this defense, get Frankie Louvu over here, I can do this against the defense. Also, I like Trey Amos too. Last little thought there. Trey Amos, good player.
Yeah. When
he's healthy.
It's a good shout. I disagree with you maybe a little bit about Antonio Williams. I think he's a little bit like more of a gritty, willing blocker, maybe even than a guy
Downs.
You know, he just isn't like a tackle breaker. And I think he actually had some pretty good ball skills and tight coverage and played physically. So maybe a little bit more of a gritty guy than maybe. Yeah, I'd really like him. And I think he could be a Z for this team. But honestly, as you were talking about, like, those two receivers working together and Chigakonkwo, like, I kind of think there's some similarities to the last team that we talked about where, like, you could see them like align those two guys, McLaurin and Williams, up as the X and then the ins and the slot off ball receiver. And then, like, in my mind, it's Tyler Warren, like, leaking to the backside of the formation, or Chigakonkwo to get him those yards after catch. Cause so much of Tyler Warren's like big plays last year came off play action where they would just get it and get it to him, let him rumble after the catch. And I think Okonkwo can do some similar things here. So, like, it can be done. You can make it work when you theoretically have like the move tight end and a slot only or slot mostly receiver. It can be done. Mm-hmm. I think this is a team to do it. And yeah, I just think McLaurin has always gotten kind of pigeonholed as like a vertical, like, speed receiver. I like his route running a lot. I like his separation ability a ton, especially on those in-breaking routes. So I think he fits this offense really well. If everybody stays healthy, big if, and McLaurin, you know, who's a sneaky older player, like, he doesn't fall off or anything like that, I actually think this offense, despite the lack of receiving talent, can be very good.
Yeah, it's just a weird mix. No, Antonio Williams is a guy, like, I gave him the highest grade I can get on a guy that I think is slot only. You know, like, that's how I put it out. Like, and I'm glad you brought up the blocking stuff, because you're absolutely right. I just looked back at my own notes and I was like, surprisingly gritty blocker is my note on him. So that's my own error there. But no, I do think that, I think he's going to be the one that stands. I know other people are hyping it up, but I do think he has a great stylistic fit for anything. And David Blau is a very traditional offensive mind, so I'm glad you brought up the kind of copying, pasting of kind of the last section. Running back-wise, I didn't even mention the running backs. Rashad White actually could be a decent fit in this offense as far as just – I think he's good from under center and traditional runs, but also screen game. I think this offense will open up some screens if there's some Ben Johnson in there and that little kind of flair of that offense. But just have to see. David Blau can call anything, and they have a new offensive line coach as well. I think it's his first time being the O-line coach in the NFL, which is – we'll see.
Always interesting.
We'll see how that goes. Yeah. New first time O-line coach, first time offensive play caller. And the first time offensive play caller was only role he's had before was assistant quarterback coach. And so that can go a lot of ways is how I'll kind of put it.
Can I pitch you a show idea here? Well, we're over an hour into this show. We need you to do a show. And, you know, you could probably talk about it with yourself for 2 hours, but you need to do like a show at some point here, offensive line coach situations, and put them into buckets. Like, not worried, like, you're great, not worried about it. Kind of the middle, and then we'll see. Like, I'm very curious that, like, because I'm very excited about this David Blau thing and what this offense could look like. But then, I hear you bring up, like, oh, yeah, first time offensive line coach. And I've certainly been guilty of, like, not focusing on that previously enough. So I think that would be, maybe put you some more work on your calendar here, Nate, as we head into training camps.
I need some, I do need some August content ideas for articles. I can't stave away Al going like, hey, I need all month for a big board. I know I usually need 2 weeks. So I needed one other article idea for August. So that actually might be perfect. So thank you for the idea, man.
There you go. We are reading again in 2026.
We are. Have you read anything? Any books this year?
I'm reading. I just started The People. Well, I read Ina Garten's memoir. I finished that pretty recently. Now I'm reading The People's History of the United States, which is a nice depressing.
Welcome to my college years.
which is a nice depressing before bed book. So yeah, good. That's where I'm at right now.
Yeah. What is he saying? Goodwill Hunting? That'll really blow your socks off or knock your hair out, knock your hair back. Yeah, that's one. I read The Great Successor, I believe it was called. It was about Kim Jong-un. Just kind of like a little biography on him, which was interesting. I actually really, the Dennis Rodman section was really interesting and funny. Funny in a dark way, I should say.
Funny, dark, and funny.
Yeah, which is right up my alley. And then I'm reading Future Noir, which is about the making of Blade Runner. It's like 700 pages making of Blade Runner. That's the stuff I like.
Aggressive. Yeah, I'm listening to Red Rising in the morning. I read before bed at night. I listen to books on my morning walk. So
I own Red Rising.
Red Rising and the People's History of the United States. That's where I'm at right now.
Okay. Very nice. Yeah, I know. I got a whole bunch of biographies. I got like Ricky Henderson biography I want to read. I got like a Bo Jackson biography I want to read. Yeah, I got a whole bunch too. We'll talk more about books after this. We're going to take our last break and we'll come back with a couple more teams. The last two teams to round out this show. See you guys in a sec. All right, we are back. Last two teams here. Kind of opposites end of the spectrum, maybe, of kind of how we've talked about these teams the last couple of years. No, that's not the good way to put it. Anyways, let's just get to the Miami Dolphins. The Miami Dolphins, who are currently projected for one of the lowest win totals this year at 4.5 wins, according to BetMGM. They finished last year at 7-10. They got a whole new coaching staff. They got a new GM. They got a new quarterback in Malik Willis. They trade away Jalen Waddle. They released Bradley Chubb. They traded Jalen Phillips last year. They got rid of, who else did they trade away? Jalen Ramsey was there again. Got rid of him. Micah Fitzpatrick gone. Just everybody gone. Just gone. But they got Aaron Brewer. They got Jordan Brooks. They got Patrick Paul. They got Devon Achane. Who else am I missing? We'll talk about it. The Dolphins. Where are you at with the Dolphins in 2026? Where do you think about? Which players are you excited to watch? What can they take away from this year? Et cetera, Matt, the Miami Dolphins.
I mean, this is the ultimate, like, which young guys stick here this season? Because, yep. It's just really tough to get, I think, excited about either side of the ball.
Nice here. You're trying to be so nice here, and I can hear the hesitation.
It's tough to talk about either side of the ball as like a real needle moving unit, which we know. Right. Which I think we know what this team is in a deep rebuild.
I don't
want to
pile on Dolphins. I know Dolphins fans are probably like, all right, get it. Yeah. And I get that as a Minnesota Timberwolves fan, I'm a Seattle Mariners fan for decades. I get it. I get how exhausting that is. So sorry to cut you off, but I know we've tried to take this a different way.
I think more than fair on all accounts there. I think Dolphins fans are probably going to, you know, unplug from the NFL season if they haven't already. I think we just know but at the same time, like, I think the Malik Willis thing is obviously going to be a fun experiment. I wish he was throwing to Jalen Waddle, but they've kind of got the, you know, let's see what sticks in the receiver room. Achane is so interesting because so much of his value has been derived from his, and honestly, maybe not. I'm fantasy brained on this one that, like, I was going to say so much of his value has been derived as a pass catcher, but then, God, some of those like just quick dump offs from Tua were just awful to watch. So maybe that's not real value. It's just PPR scam value. So it's just, to me, it's just which young guys stick, really. And that's on both sides of the ball as well. Like Chris Johnson, I did like that pick for them in the first round as a corner. He's somebody I think fits this defense really well. Yeah, it just to me, I think it's, I don't know. It's just like which young guys stick. So then we come into 2027 and we know like what's our core. I think the offensive line is pretty intriguing. Not all the way around, but they have some really, really interesting players.
I know.
You mentioned Patrick Paul. Aaron Brewer is awesome. Proctor as a guard. I mean, we'll see what that looks like, obviously. I know you had some questions. Your dad had some questions about that whole thing there. So, it's going to be – I think the run game could be really interesting and fun to watch for the one quarter that they're, like, competitive week to week.
That's I don't have much to add on that because that's exactly how I kind of came to it. It's like, it's really just looking at who can stick, like, as you put it, where are the young guys to build around? Are there any, that's why sometimes too, it's like, sometimes the crap teams are kind of fun because they give guys snaps that haven't gotten snaps before. But some of these guys, I'm like, I already know what you are, Tutu Atwell. I already know what you are, Jalen Tolbert. You know, it's not like a young guy where I'm like, yeah, oh, cool, cool, cool. I want to see how he operates here. So like that, you know, whatever you want to say, Chris Bell, he's an interesting. I actually thought that was an interesting dart throw for them. Like, they're a team that can be patient with him.
Not even the first receiver that they drafted, by the way.
I know. I
mean, Caleb Douglas. I know. They took that, too.
God, they took three.
Yeah, I mean. Yeah, right. Kevin Coleman, who I think is another interesting player. Like, they do have a very fascinating receiver room. Not like, oh yeah, draft these sleepers in fantasy type thing, but no, just again, like, who comes out of this? Because I like Malik Washington coming to the NFL as well.
I do too. Yeah, I know he's done some cool stuff. You know, like, they. I'm like, yeah, I don't know. When he got touches and everything, I'm like, he always just kind of stands out to me. He's a guy I've just always kind of kept an eye on. It's like, I don't know if he's just a glorified role guy and I'm just like those flashes, or like, he's a guy I would give more chances to and just to see. Like, can you be a starter? Because I think you could maybe find him because he has some juice there. Achan again.
By the way, not to cut you off there, but even just on the defensive side of things, like, Kenneth Grant, Chop Robinson, does anybody have a take on these guys? Like, young players coming into with a new coach. They were first round picks in back-to-back years. Like, Chop Robinson was pretty badass as a rookie. And then just.
Yes.
I don't really know what happened last year. Kenneth Grant, I mean, it was kind of always a bit of a strange pick. I mean, yeah, injuries and stuff like that. Yeah. But Kenneth Grant was always a bit of a strange pick with where they were in seemingly like a win now operation, which, I mean, clearly they were. GM cleaned out immediately.
They knew something we didn't.
So, yeah, just those are two. Those are the type of guys where I'm like, all right, yes, we know who the new staff and new brain trust has brought in here. But any of the guys from the old era beyond like Devon Achane, who's obvious, they signed him to a contract essentially. Like, do any of those young guys like take another step under this staff?
Yeah, and Grant was a guy that's like, I understood the idea of him, but then he goes to the Dolphins. I was like, oh, why'd you go there? But like, I know because stat-wise, he's never going to be a guy that shines. So, yeah, he is a guy I need to study longer. He did have some nice moments when he got more stretches. But I don't have like a definitive opinion on how his rookie year went. But his guy as a prospect, I got higher on throughout the process, like even more than his teammate, Mason Graham. Like, they kind of did the inverse for me. Graham, I cooled on, and then Grant, I warmed on. And I do think he had some nice moments. But then it's like, Zach Seiler is a really good player. But Zach Seiler is 30 something. They drafted Jacob Rodriguez too, which I thought was interesting. And again, corner wise, they needed corners desperately. I'm glad you mentioned Chris Johnson. Great fit because this is gonna be a zone heavy scheme, and I think he's ideal in that kind of scheme. And then they signed Juju Brents, who I know he's returning and everything, but like, Brents actually I think could be a decent fit in this scheme as well, but who knows, that might just be me off of his 1 year where he actually had a decent stretch, and I might be just hanging on. Another curious quirk of this roster, because it's completely rebuilding, new kicker, new punter, new long snapper. I always love when the whole battery swap out. Why not? Let's do that. Or change the whole team up anyways. But I will say, if there's something that you're watching with the Dolphins, that I think they have a national TV game. But if you're just watching the Dolphins on a Sunday and they're playing the Bills, or you're just like, oh, whatever. Oh, I got to fill up the fourth multi-screen. Check out their O-line. Their O-line could be legit good. Not even just good for them. Legit good. The Paul's interesting. Brewer's interesting. Savania really came along during his rookie year. You mentioned Proctor at guard. Fun experiment. Even if I was a little cooler on him at tackle, could be a cool jumbo guard. And Austin Jackson, whatever. But that's a pretty interesting O-line group. Who knows with Greg Dulcich if he is just a Mike McDaniel one-year, because we have to, offensive wonder, because his underlying stats were great. He has talent. But we'll see if Bobby Sloat gets anything out of him. And the offensive line coach is not I know it's tight end, but the offensive line coach is Zach Yenser. He was the guy. He was the assistant O-line coach for the Texans, including under Bobby Slowick, and then last year for the Texans. So not really tapping into a fruitful tree there with the offensive line. So yeah, I know. Yeah, that didn't really get my juices going. But I would say that watch the O-line, watch for young guys. Chop Robinson hopefully revisits his rookie year. Jordan Brooks is awesome. So that's a cool player if you want to check him out as well. Still can't believe he's still signing there. Yeah. Dolphins, 4.5 wins, I think is justified. I think their over-under is very justified. Malik Willis, we'll just see. Bobby Slowick is going to be very traditional. And Willis is good for traditional. So we'll see you there too. But he's a very sick athlete. Willis will be great running. So that's exciting. So Malik Willis with a good old line and him bouncing around and scrambling will be fun.
Like I said, first quarter. Watch the first quarter run game.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I think that'll be it. By the way, 7 guys on this roster are 29 or older, and 2 of them are the kicker and the punter. So just a lot of young guys on this roster.
It's the Packers way. When you're hiring all Packers coaches and GMs, the Packers were the eternal youngest team in the NFL award winners. So we'll just keep that going. All right, last team here. I don't know if we've ever talked about this team. You know, they really go by the wayside. They're never in the news. Their players are never dating anybody or married to anybody anyways. That's Kansas City Chiefs, who finished third last year at 6-11. And the Chiefs, other than signing Patrick Mahomes to a big money extension and, of course, bringing back Travis Kelce for larger than vet minimum, which is still the funniest thing to me, that they overpay him, even though it should be mutually beneficial. Hey, we keep you employed, but you take the vet minimum so we can sign other guys. I don't know. That's just me. Me and how I view vets and team and all that stuff. But the big move was they signed Kenneth Walker, something they desperately needed. Last 2 years, the Chiefs run game has been truly the least explosive run game probably of our lifetimes, at the least of the new millennium. I legitimately mean that, two of the least explosive run games you'll ever see. Enter Kenneth Walker. And then they traded one and let the other one go in free agency. Their corners, Trent McDuffie and Jalen Watson, signed and drafted a bunch of defensive guys and Garrett Nussmeier in the 7th round. But with the Chiefs, what do you want to talk about with them? How do you feel about them? Mahomes coming off an injury. Who knows with the offense, defensive new faces? What do you think about the Chiefs, Matt?
I don't know how they made this outline. I feel like we talk about the Chiefs all the time. I feel like you and I have had, and I know even separately from you, I feel like I've had, 15 conversations in just the last couple of months about how down I am on this passing game. And like, I can only say Andy Reid's going to forget about more football than I'll ever learn in 5 lifetimes. I can only say it so many times. So I'm actually not going to talk about the passing game. I'm not going to talk about the receivers. I'm not going to talk about Rashee Rice. And I actually, is this a defense/run game based team now heading into 2026, which sounds weird.
You stole my notes.
I mean, you were kind of already leaning into it anyway, so let's go just full on to it here. Like,
let's do it.
Patrick Mahomes coming off an injury. There's a reason I don't want to talk about their right. wide receiver room.
Right.
Kelce coming back on the ceremonial contract. Yeah, he really needs the money for sure. So that's why they had to give him that boost there, Nate. So, they signed Kenneth Walker. That seems to be their answer to, like, the passing game was great. No, it's totally fine. Design is fine. The players are fine. We just need a more explosive run game. Okay. Like, well, all right. That's what they're going for there. And then, they really went hard at fixing their defense. So, I do wonder if they're just going to say, hey, this is going to just be a scrap it out, like, rock fight type of team in 2026, which would be very different than the Chiefs that we've come to know and love, but it could be not even really loved at times over the years, but it's certainly what we thought of what Patrick Mahomes like prime years would look like. We didn't think they'd be skewing into a rock fight type of team, but I do wonder if that's where they're going here as they come into sort of a strange year in their dynasty or whatever you want to call that this run has been.
It would be a welcome pivot if they did lean into the run game. And even if Mahomes was healthy, I think it's a pivot they needed to do. Not just play calls, but just personnel, how they work their personnel. Having said that, I think the Kenneth Walker signing was I didn't like, again, he's him and Etienne. It's like, I didn't like him for everybody. I love Walker with the Chiefs because it's, even though he's not the perfect back, I think his vision's iffy. He can be inconsistent with all that. The Chiefs didn't need a plotter that's, they didn't need Jonah Coleman. Like, I'm just going to bring up Jonah Coleman because him and Kenneth Walker are the antithesis of each other. They didn't need that, the guy that just gets on base. They need a guy that freaking hits home runs. And it doesn't matter if he strikes out a bunch. They don't need a guy that just makes contact. They've had a guy that made contact. His name was Isaiah Pacheco. And they had Kareem Hunt. Like, those guys make contact. They need a guy that hits some doubles and triples and home runs. Who cares if he strikes out 150 times? So, and even they needed a guy that boosts the screen game. Like, the screen game of Andy Reid was one of the strengths that he's always had since Philly. And then now it's just kind of, I don't really remember a worthy screen of the Chiefs in the last couple of years where I'm like, wow, that was cool. Watch all that motion they did, all this backfield action. They popped open the screen. They just haven't had a back that really makes it worthwhile. Like, why would I drop a play for you if you're just going to get 5 yards? So that's something Kenneth Walker is phenomenal on. You can bring up multiple times. I think in the playoffs, he had a good one where he took one like for either a long touchdown or a long one early in the game. So they are – Eric Bieniemy came back from the Bears. While I do have frustrations with Andy Reid having a lot of retreads in the coaching staff, maybe Bieniemy brings something new, or maybe brings even just a personality that's going to force them to change some things. I think when Bieniemy was part of the play calling in his last year, I had frustrations with the offense because I thought they were too reliant on RPOs. And I thought when they ran all those RPOs, Mahomes was too leaning more towards the pass read than the handoff read. And now maybe, I wouldn't say it overcorrected, but they're still trying to find that balance of their offense. So maybe balance is the best word, whether it's a balanced attack, balance where the ball goes, but that's what they just have to find as a team, because I just do think that that they just have to, because especially with Mahomes' injury and just the personnel that they have. Now, the strengths of this team, I think the O-line is going to be good, like legitimately good. The biggest question mark to me is the right tackle, and I even think Moore is okay. But I think Sua Mataia is good at left guard. He really improved last year. He's still super young. Josh Simmons, I know, has had some stuff that I don't feel like I can get into. I don't know, but he's had some stuff, and I know everyone looks at him. He's super skinny. I rewatched some film of him as a rookie. Like, he's an all pro caliber left tackle. Like, and I'm not saying that lightly. Like, he is so talented and so good, and they barely help him out with chips and anything like that. And he can take on guys one-on-one. Man, he could be something if he just stays on the field. Creed Humphrey is one of the best offensive linemen, period. And Trey Smith was a little down last year, but at his best is good. That line you can run behind. And it's just more about the offensive philosophy I think Reed has to get to. And bringing back old teams, all of Andy Reid's best offenses, whether it's with the Eagles or the Chiefs, his run-pass split was 60-40. 60% pass, 40% run. 2018 Chiefs, 40.6% run rate. 2004 Eagles with T.O., Terrell Owens. Bringing it back to 2004, baby, because I remember that offense. 39% run rate. 2022 Chiefs, 39.3% run rate. The same as the 2004 Eagles, actually. 2020 Chiefs, 39.5%. When he gets away from that is when it goes askew and it feels wrong. But when he finds that balance, that's when it can really come together. And I think they need to find that balance, at least in the run game. And then I know I've been talking a while. Defensively, really cool. I think how they reconfigured the defense, I like it better. You know, losing two good corners is not my favorite team building strategy, but I do think Noel Williams is actually pretty talented. I like him on the outside. Mansoor Delane's got a lot of ability. And I know they signed Alohi Gilman, or I'm sorry, Kader Kohu to play a nickel. But I do like Chris Rowland Wallace as the slot better than that. So The DB room has to get some more venom. And I think they actually did a nice way of kind of injecting a little bit into there as well. But yeah, it's team at a crossroads, which I think we all know, but definitely as you kind of take a step back and look at them.
Yeah, I think it's just really going to be a very different looking Chiefs team. And definitely it's a tough way to go into the offseason, like losing two corners just like that. But I do think the way they've come out of it is it looks pretty solid. And I think it's you trust, I sound stupid, but I really trust almost like Spags to put together a defense more than I trust like the offensive brain trust at this point to put together a pass game. So, yeah, I think they're going to be a little bit of a rock fight, run game, defensive heavy team. And, maybe that's enough to scrap them into a playoff spot in a tough AFC. I don't know that division. We come back to the Broncos and we talked about the Chargers in that division as well. It's going to be tough in the AFC West for sure.
I think the Chiefs have a higher floor than I think people realize with Mahomes, Andy Reid, Spags, this whole line,
the ceiling. Enough defensive juice. The question.
It's the ceiling. Like I just can't picture his team winning more than I think they're just in that kind of 8-10 win range. Like that's just where they're at right now, maybe to 11, but that's just kind of where I fit them right now, which is AFC is just wide open. So who knows, the things got brick, right? And this is the last stat I'll leave on before we kind of wrap this up. But the Chiefs last year had 35% rushing success rate. It's okay. Like, you know, you want to get to 39%. Their explosive runs the last two seasons was 5%. Every other season, Andy Reid has called plays. I'm including all the way back to the Eagles in 2000 and beyond. 8.4% was their explosive run rate. He's had five seasons over 10% with the Eagles or the Chiefs. 10% is extraordinary. That's like what the Dolphins were last year. 14% explosive dropback over his entire team time calling plays. Last two seasons. Last year, 10.3%, easily the worst, which is horrid. And then last year is 12.1% in 2025. That was the exact same as the 2015 Chiefs as far as explosive dropbacks. Do you know what the Chiefs started doing in 2015, 16, and then 17, and then 18? Was they had that 1 year, so 2017, when Alex Smith was just chucking stuff on pinning grenades and launching it. And then they drafted Patrick Mahomes also in 2017. So we're at the same kind of nadir that the Chiefs were offensively 10 years ago. And then they hit a huge moment of mental, you know, they expanded their minds mentally as far as their playbook. And then they added Patrick Mahomes. So I'm just curious if this is the nadir this year or last year was the nadir, but there's just that last little renaissance of Andy Reid in this offense. So just kind of curious, just historically too, if the Andy Reid kind of does it again, kind of finds his groove back again. All right. We just went super long on these teams, but that was a ton of fun. Told you we'd deep dive in some of these teams. Also, we haven't done this in a while. Let's do a quick breakout watch.
This is breakout watch.
All right. Throughout the offseason, we were supposed to be naming one player a week, but because we go long, we've had to cut it a few times. But we've sprinkled some in. But this is a good spot to talk about breakout candidate for the 2026 season. Matt, real quickly, who is your breakout candidate for this year?
Yeah, mine's Isaiah Likely, tight end for the New York Giants. When I think about just like you and I have this conversation a lot. It's very rare that a team will funnel their passing game through a tight end. It's just not many offenses that will do that. It's unusual, like that a tight end could, you know, be like potentially the team leader in targets. Kind of think Isaiah Likely with the New York Giants is a really good candidate this year because of the health of Malik Nabers, which really stinks. Of course, like he's, you know, Nabers is one of those guys that could be a tier one receiver. He was kind of on that trajectory before he got hurt, and now we just don't know what he's going to look like this year. And the rest of the receiver room, I think I like Malachi Fields as a round three rookie. I think Darnell Mooney as a reclamation project is interesting. Like they've got some names at wide receiver beyond the guys that they brought in, you know, last minute, like Odell Beckham's back here, Juju Smith-Schuster, and those type of characters. They've got kind of the, you know, kind of wide receiver room that could rotate a little bit and be useful players, but they don't, to me, have one dynamic, even Fields, who I like. I don't know that he's going to be like a dynamic guy that right off the bus, round three rookie, leads the team in targets. I think that could actually be Isaiah Likely, who, you know, is a downfield oriented player. I think there's some synergy there with Jackson Dart. I think if we can get him on some of these outcuts and everything, there's like Dart likes to work outside the numbers down the football field. I think there are some ways that he can be a really impactful player there. So, you know, betting on tight ends on their second contract has typically, we've kind of seen this break of late where more younger tight ends have just hit the ground running. But typically, historically, these tight ends on their second contracts have been good bets to make. I think Likely is a good bet to make this year.
I think bringing up just the rest of the pass catchers is kind of illustrates your point. Because as much as I like them, auxiliary pieces, I think Likely is the one I kind of rely on the most. Not that I don't think Fields can get to that point, but it's unproven until you see it on the NFL football field. So Likely, nice. He's just a unique player. There's not a lot of Likely archetypes. Harold Fannin, maybe, is another one from the Browns. Like just that kind of how he's shaped, how his route running is, what he's best at. Like there's it's a unique kind of role that
unique
they fill
tight
the
end. So, yeah.
Great,
And that worked out well last year for Harold Fannin production wise in a very chaotic wide receiver room. So this is kind of a similar bet here.
And tight ends are, there's a reason tight ends are quarterback's best friend, especially ones that maybe, you know, Jack Starr can be kind of point and shoot. Andy, or the Matt Nagy passing game can kind of be kind of point and shoot. So I think that could be a good way to get him some touches. I went with, and I had to ask our producers because I feel like I keep nominating young safeties in the NFL, but I'm going to go with Jonas Sanker, safety from the Saints. I think three of my candidates for these breakouts have been year two safeties, which can kind of tell you something about safety value. Sanker, though, starter. Play deep safety for them, too high safety, I should say, for them. Really good feeling the run. I thought his football IQ really stood out to me watching the Saints defense. That was sneaky pretty good at the end of last year. And I think Sanker, his intelligence, his versatility really shown and really gets highlighted because it's kind of some blitz happy stuff in that defense. Getting moved to the slot. I'm glad we got the little tweet here as well. Been announced, or at least he's viewed as the slot defender or starting slot defender. And I think that's a perfect way to use his skill set. I mean, we've talked a lot about slots and stars the last few years. Feels like it's a conversation that happens every offseason. But Sanker is a guy that I think has that skill set that's going to, he's going to be highlighted in that area as a blitzer, filling the run. And the slot is a great way to kind of show off your IQ because you have to look at every angle. You have to fill the run. You have to play in your zone. Sometimes you're man. Sometimes you have to move in into the box based on the look as well. So I think Sanker would get highlighted there. But fun player, good size, good tackler, very smart, pretty aware in coverage, more than twitchy. So that's why, again, I think the slot is kind of perfect for that skill set. But yeah, check out Jonas Sanker, though. He's a really cool, fun player for the Saints.
I think defense was statistically much better than people think last year. So that's a good call out.
Yes. 11th in weighted DVOA. That's Sanker was a third round pick from Virginia, by the way. Did he go to the same? No, different school, different high school. But all right, we're closing it out today. Matt, thank you for spending a feature film length time with me again. I know you don't watch movies, you watch TV shows. So thank you for spending two episodes of prestige television with me.
There you go.
It was phenomenal. You're watching House of the Dragon.
I was like, okay, now that's something I understand. Prestige television.
Yes. Two episodes of House of the Dragon with me. So I appreciate that. But yeah, we're closing it out today. We'll be back every Tuesday throughout the offseason. Only a couple more weeks. We got the All Average pod coming out soon. That's one of my favorites that you and I did. I love doing that one. And then we're going to get to top 10 offenses, top 10 defenses. We'll start twice a week during training camp, starting the end of July into August. And then season, baby. We're rolling. We're rolling Sunday, Tuesday, Thursdays. Let's do this. But I'm Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice. That is Matt Harmon. You can find him at Matt_BYB on social media. Make sure to check out Reception Perception and the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. Matt is starting to crank it up and he's the best. So thank you again, Matt, for joining me. Rate us 5 stars here. And also, oh, last little piece of news because I can't get out of here quick enough. I take forever on all this. The Yahoo Sports NFL YouTube channel is here. Subscribe now so you're ready when we move over next month. Like I mentioned, all those shows, that preview series, top 10 offense, top 10 defenses, Sunday, Tuesday, Thursdays, once we get into the season, all those shows on the Yahoo Sports NFL YouTube channel. So make sure to check out Football 301 and all the great content there. And also wherever you get your podcast, like, subscribe, all that great stuff. Thank you to everyone behind the scenes for making us look and sound good. As always, thank you for listening. See you guys next time.